We're back.
Yes, we are. We're back.
Season two, baby.
Season two, bitches.
We're back bigger, stronger, more powerful than ever before.
and stuff.
I thought you were going to jump in.
I don't know. I had no idea where you were going with it. Like, what?
Love being so in sync with you, babe.
Oh, God, we're just like two peas in separate bags of peas in separate shopping markets.
Yeah.
Supermarkets.
Yeah.
Love you. Yes, here we are.
Season two. We came back.
We came back, as promised.
Mm-hmm.
And this should be released on the date we said it would, September 17th.
God, I hope so.
All things going to plan.
Please just let it be released on time.
We hope you liked the mini-series.
Yes, this is our first chance to talk to you post-witchcraft series.
Yeah, we thoroughly enjoyed doing it and making it. It was a bit frantic at our end.
But oh, I had the best time. It was so interesting. I loved every single story. So if you haven't listened, please go and listen.
Go and listen.
I'm super proud of what we made and what we put together.
Yeah, I think we did a really good job.
I think we did a really good job.
And now, here we are for season two.
I know.
10 more episodes of spooks, history, my terrible jokes, pissing off my wife, all the good stuff.
Can you believe it? 10 more episodes.
10 more. Here we are, settling in.
And we're being cruel because we're continuing to release them one a week. No binging for you.
Unless you find this later.
True.
In case, hello from the past.
Spooky.
As is history.
What was your favourite moment from last season?
When it finished. Oh.
That doesn't hurt my very soul.
I thoroughly enjoyed the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, was that your peak?
I think Loch Ness Monster or the Glam's Castle Monster.
Fair.
Season two, I'm sad to say we haven't been sponsored by Sassenach Whiskey.
Stop!
It hasn't happened yet, so keep hounding him for us.
Don't hound anybody, especially not if someone like Kieran tells you to. That's asking, just silly.
Keep asking nicely on our behalf.
No, no.
Yeah,
no.
Well, in short of that, we have a donate page on the website instead.
We do. It's very exciting. Yeah. I'm more nervous about that than releasing episodes.
It's generallyspooky.com/donate, or if you just go to generallyspooky.com, it's in the menu. And if you are thoroughly enjoying what we do, you can now donate to us so we can keep doing it.
Yeah,
because it's quite expensive paying for the hosting. I'm paying for the hosting of the website to bring the podcast every month, so it'd be quite good if we weren't just losing money with every passing week. That would be quite pleasant.
Yeah, we love doing it, but we don't make anything from this.
Yeah, and we'd like to, just so we can carry on doing it.
I want to do this forever. I never want to stop making these.
Yeah.
Ever.
Absolutely.
So if you're a millionaire and you're listening, now's your chance.
Now's your chance.
I just put my wish into the universe. You can fulfill this for me.
With the money, we'll go via PayPal.
Yes.
Straight to us, and we're just going to use it for the podcast. So we can keep doing it and we can maybe get some more equipment.
Yeah.
Maybe go on some spooky trips to bring you better content.
Mm-hmm.
And all that kind of good stuff. So if you're feeling incredibly generous, it's at generallyspooky.com/donate.
Even just donating enough just to buy us a coffee.
Yeah.
It means more than you know, and it helps more than you know.
Yeah, really absolutely. Does. And we will be just infinitely appreciative.
Definitely.
And our heartfelt thanks.
I wonder if we could do shout outs on the podcast.
I would be able to do that. We could shout out anyone who
for donors.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, yeah, it would mean a lot, but no pressure.
Yeah.
Because, you know, live your life. We're not your mother.
Mm. And if you want to enjoy this sweet, free content, then feel free.
Exactly.
But please don't.
Kieran has a weird feverish look in his eye.
Please, my wife said she'll beat me if we don't get any donations.
He's twitching.
She's going to haunt me, you guys.
I mean, I haunt you anyway.
That's true.
I can walk very quietly.
Spooking around the house. So, shall we dive in?
Yeah, I guess. We just have to start again, don't we?
We do. That's how this works.
I feel like this is going to be a more successful episode one than season one, episode one. I don't feel nearly as nervous anymore.
Oh, just a bag of nerves. Just a bag of nerves in that.
Yeah. But I don't even like thinking about that episode.
Yeah, I kind of cringe when I think about it.
Well, I've gone spooky for today's episode. But
That's not what I'm here for. I'm in the wrong place.
Well, you better leave. You better go.
I thought it was just about generally.
Just generally.
Yeah, I thought this was the generally podcast.
What would you talk about on a generally podcast?
Weather. You know, pleasantries, that sort of thing.
That sounds awful. I don't like doing that in real life.
Oh, how's the weather? It's raining. Oh, God, what's that like?
So, that's summer over. Well, it is now, but people have been saying that since June, whenever there's the odd day of rain.
Yeah.
No, that's summer. Every year.
Every year.
Every year.
I've derailed us.
You have. You have.
A spooky episode to start.
Yes. Spooky. And today is also going to be very special. We've done something different for today's episode.
Yes, we have.
Kieran knows the story I'm about to tell you.
I do.
Which I don't think has properly happened yet.
For the first time in my life, I'm an informed citizen.
Yeah, Kieran knows what's going on today. He's not just shown up, put some pants on and rolled into recording.
Just with the podcast. I have no idea what's going on anywhere else in my life.
Does anyone?
Hope not.
Well, not only does Kieran know the story of this episode, we took a generally spooky field trip for this episode.
Yes, we did.
So for the first time ever, we have our own experiences and stories to tell you as part of the story of the episode.
Yes, we do.
It's so exciting.
Yep.
I've been dying to talk about it.
We've had some first-hand spook. It was just last week. Mm-hmm. We're recording this on Sunday and we took the trip last Monday.
Yep. And now we can bring it to you. Mm.
And if you're on the ball, you're listening to this next Friday.
Anyway, we travelled all the way down to Edinburgh and we spent the night going around Greyfriars Kirkyard.
Yes, we did.
Which is the subject of today's episode. We're talking about Greyfriars Kirkyard and we're going to be talking about the Mackenzie Poltergeist.
Yes, we are.
Because it's spooky season and I'm ready for it and I just want to be spooked out my nut.
Get my spook on.
Which I was, which we'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're talking about for today.
Yes, we are. And if you don't know it, it's in Edinburgh.
I did say that.
Don't think, did you?
Yeah, I said we went down to Edinburgh.
Oh, yes, we did.
I mean, how on earth can I expect people to listen to my story if you don't listen to
my story?
I
know, if I'm not listening, Jesus.
And you were there.
I was there. Well, I know I was in Edinburgh. That's what the sign said.
Wait, hold on. Kieran, I've just noticed that he has Edinburgh just written on his palm. Is that your only note for today's episode? Is that it?
That's my pre-prepared.
Anyway, we're going spooky for our return to the airwaves, mm-hmm. episode one. I thought we'd go big. And I should probably calm down a little bit before we get into it. I'm so excited to be telling a ghost story. It's September. It's not summer anymore. It's just the dream. It's the dream. Well, yeah, usually this is when I would ask you, Kieran, if you know anything about Greyfriars Kirkyard or the Mackenzie Poltergeist, and you would say
no.
So I can't ask you that this week. I don't have my usual springboard into the episode because I don't want you to just tell the story.
Well, yeah, I just tell an unresearched, unfact-checked version of the story, which might be entertaining in its own right, but it's not what we're here for.
No, so I'm just going to get into it with no real intro step, which is strange for me.
We'll just go, introduction! And now you can start.
Okay. Greyfriars is one of the most famous cemeteries in the world. It's really well known and has been for a very long time. It's very old. And it's right in the heart of the city of Edinburgh, like Kieran told you. Right in the middle of the city. It's not difficult to find or get to at all. It's pretty close to the Royal Mile, to be fair. And apparently, there's evidence that people have been living on that site where the kirkyard is since the Bronze Age.
Such a long time.
I think that's quite incredible whenever you hear something like that.
When was the Bronze Age?
The Bronze Age. Let me check. Because it's the one thing that Kieran. I don't have a number for, but Kieran has to ask it because he just needs to know everything, even though he doesn't do any prep for these episodes. He just has to throw it in and put me off. The Bronze Age was 3300 BC to 1200 BC.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
Right? So it's quite incredible that there's evidence that people have been living on that site in Edinburgh for 5,000 years?
Yeah.
I just think that's amazing.
That's incredible.
And we talked a little bit about that in our Urquhart Castle episode,
mm-hmm.
where we're talking about Craigfadrig.
Yes.
The Pictish settlement that's up the hill, sort of, behind it. And I had the same feeling then, knowing that people were there that long ago, and that there's evidence that people were there just astounds me.
Yeah, it's really a really humbling thing.
Yeah. I think I would have been quite happy as an archaeologist, because that just amazes me.
Yeah, big time.
Even just finding little shards of life, just wow. But before the kirkyard that is there now was built, the site was a monastery.
Mm.
Franciscan monks were there, and they followed the teachings of Saint Francis. So sort of in with the Catholic faith. And basically these friars, these monks were completely committed to God. I don't know how much you know about monks and monasteries.
Some.
Yeah, well, basically they lived in what was basically poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And they were chaste, so no sexy time. And they followed the laws of God to the letter. So they were very strict in their obedience of the Lord.
Yep.
That was how they lived their lives. And like, they were pretty peaceful. That was just what they were interested in. That's all they did.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds pretty nice.
Sounds all right. Very peaceful. I was going to ask who was chasing them when you said that, but it's not a word I've heard, not written down before.
Oh, chaste.
Yeah.
Because with a T.
Chastity belt.
Yes.
So I'd have thought chaste.
That chaste.
Yeah. There you go. They're not being chased.
No.
Well, devil dogs.
Not yet.
Mm.
The monks helped the poor who lived around the monastery. They grew herbs and their own food, you know, the herbs for medicine, that kind of thing, which was pretty common across all monasteries, really.
Mm-hmm.
You hear stories a lot of monks who, like, make their own wine and alcohol. You know, like Saint Germain, the liqueur that we tried that time.
And Buckfast.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's a common thread throughout mm-hmm. them all, and the friars who were at this monastery were no different. And they are actually the reason that the kirkyard and the church has the name that it does.
Oh.
Grey Friars.
They were just all called Kirk.
No. They're not from Star Trek. No, Grey Friars. The place was called that because they wore grey robes.
Oh, nice.
Grey Friars.
Hmm.
So there you go. But like all things that we talk about on the podcast, this very nice and lovely thing had to come to an end.
Naturally.
The monks couldn't just be allowed to continue to do good and live peacefully now, could they?
No. Well, there's not a monastery there now. That's the clue, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. So we've been there. It's not there anymore. Any guesses as to why this didn't continue?
I know some group burned down all the monasteries across Scotland and possibly Britain. Was it the Catholics or the Protestants? A slightly different religion came in and went, you can't have your religion.
So, I mean, it's going to be one of them.
Yeah.
Well, weirdly, we're going to talk a lot about this in particular in next week's episode.
Mm-hmm.
As we talk about it in next week's episode, because we've already recorded that episode.
Yeah, weirdly, we recorded that one first. Because you were doing this trip anyway.
So we're going to talk about it in a lot more depth in that. In episode 2.
Season 2, episode 2.
But basically, the monks couldn't be left alone because of a thing called the Scottish Reformation. Now, it's quite complicated. It's a huge part of Scottish history. There's a lot of information needed, a lot of background and context. So, next episode, we do go into a lot more detail. But I'll explain what I need to for today without getting too bogged down in it so that we can appreciate the Kirkyard's history.
Gives a spark notes context.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on then. During the Reformation, Scotland broke away from the Catholic Church and the Pope. So before that, Scotland had been a Catholic country. And this was happening in the 1500s.
Yep.
With me? More and more people were turning to Protestantism instead of Catholicism. So if you're Protestant, you don't treat the Pope as the head of your church.
Mm-hmm.
But this wasn't a smooth transition from one to the other. It was very violent and volatile. It was a pretty brutal time in Scotland's history. Now, 1560 was an important year in the history of the Reformation. For one, Mary, Queen of Scots, returned to Scotland from France in 1560. The monarch had finally returned. She'd been gone,
mm-hmm.
but she returned as an 18-year-old widow.
It's a bit rough, isn't it?
A little bit. But a group called the Scottish Reformation Parliament also convened in 1560, and they were the ones who made it official that Scotland as a whole was moving to Protestantism and rejecting everything to do with the Pope. So people were doing it anyway, but they were the ones that made it official that this was happening as a country.
Bold.
And all this would be a bit awkward because Queen Mary was a Catholic. But anyway. A preacher called John Knox was an important figure in this shift to Protestantism. And he was pretty extreme in his views. He was something called a Calvinist. And Calvinists, they basically believed that God was king over all and the Bible was law. So, you know, it was a very extreme version of how a lot of people feel generally if you follow the Christian faith. But Calvinists were very strict. They believed that humans were weak and they just couldn't help themselves from doing evil. So they had to rely on God's forgiveness and all that jazz. John Knox was a very merry soul.
Life of the party.
Yeah. And he had all these Calvinist ideals, which had good things, like broadening access to education. So if Calvinists believe that there should be a school in every parish and everyone should have access to education because then they can read the Bible. But he also brought bad things, like women were witches. So, swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
We know how terrible that all was.
Yeah, I still haven't checked if you're a witch.
Me?
Yeah.
How very dare you? Of course I'm a witch. In 1562, the monastery that's on the site of Greyfriars was taken away from the monks by Mary, Queen of Scots. Even though she was a Catholic, like the monks. And even though she was a Catholic, she didn't always do what would benefit Scottish Catholics. And we don't need to get into too much more detail on that. You just kind of need to know that it was her who was responsible. And I read that across the country at this time, these notices called beggar's summonses were put on the outside of friaries and monasteries. And basically these notices said that the monks should be evicted because the land they were on belonged to the poor. To the people who actually needed it. Now, this was pretty calculated because these notices go up and it's not like forcing anything, it's not demanding it, it's just saying that this should happen. And all of the poor are walking past the notice.
Going, we should own this land.
Exactly. So it kind of turned a lot of the public and the people that the monks were helping against the monks.
I mean, it's genius, but it's quite horrible, isn't it?
There's a lot of thought gone into that.
Yeah.
But all this meant Mary, Queen of Scots, gifted the Greyfriars Kirkyard to the city of Edinburgh. And she took the land from them and said, here you go, Edinburgh, you can have this back. And she did this for a very morbid reason. Yes.
Well, I mean, it's a graveyard now.
Exactly. You know where this is going.
So?
You saw the title of the episode. You knew what we were talking about today.
You know why we're here.
We're going to come away from Greyfriars just for a second. And instead, imagine that we're standing just outside St. Giles Cathedral on the Royal Mile.
Which we were.
Exactly. You can imagine it.
I can imagine that very well.
Now, it's a beautiful building.
True.
I haven't looked too much into it, but it's not technically a cathedral for some reason. But it was a very popular and important place of worship in the 1500s.
Mm-hmm.
But that meant something else, too. Its cemetery was incredibly crowded.
Mm.
Because if you're worshipping there and it's an important place, that's where you want to be buried. Because it's important to you. But it was particularly crowded because Edinburgh had been plagued by the plague, basically. Several times over the past couple hundred years. I think there were 11 bouts of plague in Edinburgh over, like, several hundred years.
So much plague.
Yeah, a lot of plague. And maybe we'll do an episode on it by itself, but the Black Plague or the Black Death was a terrible time and killed a lot of people.
Basically everybody.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. But John Knox was actually buried in the St. Giles Cathedral graveyard as well. That's where he was buried.
Mm.
So the problem with lots of people wanting to be buried there and lots of people dying because plague was that St. Giles graveyard became very, very full. Now, Queen Mary decided she was going to fix this problem by allowing people to be buried at Greyfriars instead of St. Giles. So after 1600, the cemetery at St. Giles stopped being used completely. And in 1879, some people had the lovely task of moving human remains from St. Giles to Greyfriars.
That's a good job, isn't it?
Several tons of remains.
Wow.
Yeah. Because what's outside St. Giles now is a car park.
Yeah.
So just think about that for a minute.
It's not a problem you really think about because it's a much more well... I mean, I imagine it still is a problem, but it's a much more well-organised problem now. I mean, yeah. It's weird. I remember reading that, like, when cars replaced horses, strangely, one of the best things about it was people didn't have to deal with dead horses anymore. Because that was one of the biggest problems.
I guess that would be a big issue, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was horse dung and dead horses caused more problems than actually, like, having to go on horseback places and things.
Oft.
Because everybody had several horses.
Yeah, yeah, that does make sense.
They would die. And then you'd have to do something with a dead horse so it didn't fester and then make everybody sick.
Yeah. Man, you don't even think about that.
Yeah. So this is even worse, because it's one thing dealing with a dead horse that, well, I mean, you might care for and be attached to, that you want to do something somewhat nice to it. But when it's a relative, it's even more important, especially if you need to be buried on...
Consecrated ground?
Consecrated ground. I couldn't remember the word.
Well, imagine if that relative had plague. Then it's an even worse problem.
Yeah.
You need to get rid of them, like, yesterday. Because otherwise, you're going the same way.
You wouldn't have your PCP to wear, would you? What is it? PCE?
PEE?
Personal PPE.
PPE.
Personal protective.
No, none of that. We can talk about it in another episode, but the plague doctors had a very early inefficient... Or I don't want to say that. They had a very early method of PPE.
Mm.
Is they had the big, thick robes, which just looked horrifying. And then the big, long mask with a big hooked beak. And the beak had spices and things.
Yeah, it was like herbs and stuff to smell, wasn't it?
Well, they thought that those herbs and spices would keep the plague away.
Mm.
It didn't. But it got rid of the worst of the smell. But it was actually the robes that did a lot of the work, because... plague is passed by fleas, so fleas couldn't get on their skin because they wore these heavy robes all the time and had everything closed off to the air.
Well, there you go.
So it's a very rudimentary and, like, mistaken logic version of PPE.
An accidental wonder.
Yeah. So there you go.
There you go.
There's a very interesting story about Edinburgh's last plague doctor, which we can talk about in another episode if you like. Fun. Because it's kind of horrifying, but interesting at the same time.
That's our zone of terror. That's the perfect.
anyway, Queen Mary has decided that nobody else can be buried in St. Giles' graveyard.
Yes.
And in there's a document that she wrote up talking about the issue and the proposed solution.
Mm-hmm.
And in this document, she's writing about the unbearable smell around St. Giles when it was too hot outside.
Oh.
That's how badly they needed a new cemetery. It was vile.
I cannot even imagine that.
No.
The hot smell of death. Oh, no.
No. Well, I mean, there's no smell like it. I feel like it's... I've never smelled a dead body.
No.
But, you know, like Mum and Dad, they've spoken sometimes about when they've smelled death. They're police officers. They're not murderers. I remember Mum just saying that you know immediately what it is without having to be told.
Oh, I remember saying that.
There's nothing like it. Like, she had never smelled it before. No one had told her. They were going into a house and someone had unfortunately died. And she said, there's nothing like it. But you know instantly what it is. Like, your body has a natural reaction. Just be like, nope, this is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It's like primal.
Grim.
So just imagine just having that on the Royal Mile.
My only remotely vague reference is there was a mouse died in a shed at our old house. And I walked in and that was humming. And that's a mouse.
Yeah, one mouse.
And that's one mouse. That's not 10,000 plagued bodies amongst other... Oh, boo.
Yeah, history's bleak.
Yeah, and smelly.
And smelly.
Hashtag history smells.
So yeah, if you... Oh, we're on Twitter now, so you can actually hashtag us using history smells if you like.
If you like, and generally spooky.
So yeah, if you ever find yourself walking past St. Giles Cathedral, spare a thought for who you're walking over.
Hmm. Well, you're not anymore.
Spooky. Well, I mean, I don't think they would have moved everything.
Well, that's true. How deep would you go? Exactly. Like, would you need to go?
And as work happened and things, you know, bones are going to get moved.
Mm-hmm. And there's one person still buried there.
Really?
On the tour, John Knox is still buried there.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought they couldn't tell.
Nope. It might have just been part of the story, but our tour guide told us that he's still buried under the car park.
Oh, I don't remember that bit.
Him alone.
Well, there you go.
Well, there you go.
Greyfriars Church, the big church that's in the kirkyard, was opened on Christmas Day in 1620.
That's quite nice.
Which I think is really lovely.
Yeah, a Christmas mass.
Yeah, like the inaugural mass of a new church happening on Christmas morning. I just think that's really lovely. It took 18 years to build, and it's a huge building.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really lovely is that I was doing research on the church, and in the present day, like now, the church is so active in the community. They do so much. There's so many projects where they work with people. There was one video I watched of people linked to the church who are working with young people and teaching them joinery. And like furniture building.
Very cool.
And one of the things they do is they repurpose church furniture that gets sent to them and then it either gets sold or sent on to another church.
Hmm. I like that.
Isn't that incredible? Mm. It seems like a really tight knit and a really welcoming congregation. That's lots pretty of nice. Lots of music and just the importance of community in that area. I think it's so nice.
That is nice.
I really enjoyed looking at their website. If you feel like just having your heart warmed a little bit, go and check out the Greyfriars Church website. Highly recommend.
A different tone,
isn't it? It's so pleasant. I think that's why I enjoyed it, because usually the stuff I find is pretty grim. Yeah, it's just so nice.
Mm.
But back to history. In 1625, so this is 5 years after Greyfriars Church opened, and the kirkyard is well established and everything by now, Charles I became king after his father, King James I and VI, who we've talked about before.
Yes.
Charles I became king after his father died. And he took after his father big time, like we talked about in the Witchcraft miniseries, because he very strongly believed in a king's divine right to rule.
Mm-hmm.
How kings are chosen by God, they're anointed under God, they're better than everybody, yada yada.
That's just always what they think.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh.
Well, I mean, I feel like it's gotten a bit better.
Well, that's true, yeah. Just in the past, that seems to be.
Mm-hmm.
Again and again. Just, I have a lot of power. Who has more power than I do? God.
Don't like that.
No, that's not right. he definitely wants me to have more power than he does.
Yeah. So King Charles I believed in this wholeheartedly. And because he believed in this, he also believed that it made good sense for the king to be the head of the church.
Naturally.
I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. So, yeah.
Don't think that makes sense to anybody but the people who are beholden to him.
No, it was a couple generations before, because this might get a bit confusing, but we're talking about King Charles I. His dad, King James,
mm-hmm.
the 6th and 1st, became King of England after Queen Elizabeth I died.
Mm-hmm.
And it was her father, Henry VIII, who became head of the Church of England because he wanted to divorce his wife. So this was a thought that had happened before. Mm-hmm. King Charles wasn't the first to decide he was going to intercede in the church. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's a bit of a family tree moment that you kind of have to follow it back. But, it was a couple generations before that Henry VIII had done that for his own personal gain.
What? He wanted to become the head of the church for personal gain, not just for the betterment of his... who are the people under a king? His people.
Well, I mean, he wasn't trying to save his soul.
Mm.
Anyway, King Charles decided that this is what he wanted to happen.
Ugh.
And it went against pretty much everything that Calvinists and Presbyterians believed in.
Mm.
Since the core of their very belief system is that God is king of everything and is above all.
Well, the Presbyterians were also very scripture heavy, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. The scripture ruled their life. Mm-hmm. So God was king over everything. God, then king, they would give their king his due. They believed the king was a monarch and above everyone else, but no one was above God. So when Charles came out with all of this, they did not like it at all.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Sort it out.
Yeah, well, it gets even worse, because not only did he want to be in control of the church, he wanted Scottish churches to be more like Anglican churches down in England. Yep. Because King Charles I is king of Scotland and England. And Ireland.
Yes.
So he wants Scottish churches to be more like English churches.
So he created the Church of Scotland? Did he?
No.
Okay.
No. He decided to go about this in a different way. He started sort of with small changes. And one of the things he did was changing the prayer books that were used in Scottish churches. I think it was the Book of Common Prayer. I think that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted that to be used instead. And people didn't like it. They had their traditions and their routines and what they were happy with. Because the Anglican Church and Presbyterian churches in Scotland, they were very different.
Mm-hmm.
And people were really upset. But he was going so far as excommunicating people who refused to accept that King Charles was the head of the church. So if you didn't accept this, you were kicked out, which is a big deal. In 1637, the Book of Common Prayer that I was talking about, it was introduced in Edinburgh and at St. Giles Cathedral, actually. Apparently, one woman who was called Jenny Geddes got so upset at the introduction of the new prayer book, she threw a stool at the minister in the middle of the service.
Jeez, oh. Maybe that's why they have pews in churches now.
Maybe, you can't really throw a pew.
Not unless you all do it together.
Can you imagine being that upset that you throw a stool at your minister?
I know, that's insane.
And in somewhere like St. Giles Cathedral, it's very grand, very regal.
Yeah. Maybe she just finished memorising them all and she was raging that they were getting changed.
Maybe. Some people wonder if her doing that was part of a wider plan for everyone to show how upset they were, and it was kind of a rebellion that other people were behind her, but she was the one that did it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. But apparently that happened.
I wonder how the two books compare. I wonder what the differences are.
I didn't get too into it, really. I imagine it's sort of tailored so that the sentiment that God is king of everything is omitted.
Yeah.
Because it changed the hymns that were sung and things like that.
It's instead of God and his kingdom, we're just going to cross out God and put the king in his kingdom. his kingdom of Earth.
Job done.
Yeah.
In 1638, the year after, Charles had pushed too far. He had flown too close to the sun, and a group was created in response to his actions, and they were called the Covenanters.
Mm.
In Edinburgh, you will pronounce this the Covenanters, but that sounds weird for me to say, so I'm going to say Covenanters.
Oh, yeah, the tour guide did say it like that.
Everyone we spoke to in Edinburgh said Covenanters.
Covenanters.
And I want to be respectful. I know that's how people in Edinburgh say it, but it sounds weird for me to say.
How would someone in America say it?
I'm not doing that.
What about Australia?
No.
French?
No. I can barely say it myself. Basically, what happened was thousands of Scots came together to sign this one incredible, important document, which conceded that Charles was their king, and they respected him above that. They respected him for that. He was their monarch. But in this document, it said outright that Charles would never be above God, and he would never be the real head of the church. So this is a very dangerous document, but a very significant document. Because it's basically treason.
Well, yeah. And when it seems so reasonable.
I know. I know. I'm not saying they're wrong.
No, I'm not at you. Just in general, it seems so reasonable.
So we respect you as our king in a legal sense. That's fine.
You were the king. You've been the king. You're part of a series of kings and queens who've gone back for thousands of years. That's fine. But you can't just decide you're the head of our church because we have the head of our church.
Who is God.
Yeah. You can't
it's
just
not
be
even like,
like
they pick someone else instead. They're just saying, you're not better than God.
Yeah. You are not above God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a lot to ask. It's not like you're not above God, so we're not respecting you as our king.
Exactly.
And we're going to start our own kingdom.
Which kind of happened to Elizabeth I. Like, I know, I think we've talked about this before, but when she was ruling down in England, the Pope outright said that if you're a Catholic, you don't have to listen to Elizabeth I.
Yeah.
She's not your queen.
Exactly.
That's something that actually happened. This isn't as bad as that.
No. This is, I mean, unless you're a raging arsehole, as it comes up so often.
Well, especially when we talk about kings and queens, I feel like that's happened a lot.
When someone goes, I want absolute power, it never ends well.
It never does it? Ever. Well, this was the National Covenant. That was the name of this document.
Mm.
And it was signed at Greyfriars in Edinburgh. And I saw some conflicting reports. Some places say that the covenant was signed in the kirkyard rather than in the church because it was completely legal for big groups to gather in the kirkyard where it wouldn't have been allowed in other places.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, some people say that's not possible because pictures and reports show them signing it on certain tombstones that didn't exist when the covenant was signed.
Mm.
So There's a bit of confusion there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I was saying the person drawing the pictures might have just made up what was on the tombstone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it wasn't there. It's just artistic license over the top.
So there are some people who say it was the church and some people say it was the kirkyard.
We'll just jump in the time machine and go and check.
Shh, don't talk about that. Now, it might be difficult to fully appreciate now, but like I said, this was a very dangerous document to have your name on. Because coming together to defy the king in this way and to stand up for what you believe in was incredibly bold, but it was treason because King Charles had decided this was the way things were. And if you're saying no, you know, you could be killed.
Yeah.
So it makes sense now, just like, well, of course they believe this, and that's fine, but it wasn't that easy for them. So it was a huge act of courage for everyone who signed that document.
Big time.
Because it evidences your treason, basically.
Well, it's signing their own death warrant to an extent,
kinda,
isn't it?
Yeah. But it didn't matter how reasonable it all sounded to Charles.
No.
As you'd expect. To him, in his eyes, they were defying him.
Mm.
Even though they still accepted him as their king, they respected his authority and his rule. They just didn't accept him being above God, which is fair, but he didn't think it was fair.
Mm.
He was absolutely livid. And he basically viewed the Covenanters as traitors.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a pretty inflated view of himself. He was determined to have as much power as he could possibly manage. And he decreed that anyone who had signed the National Covenant and anyone who refused to bend to his new rules regarding worship and everything risked execution as traitors. That was the punishment. Brutal.
Intense.
So yeah, it's just, I can't imagine how scary that must have been. For everyone who signed that document, they were incredibly brave and principled in a way that I don't think I would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, sometimes they were captured, and if they were captured, they were given a chance to renounce their faith and their beliefs and their covenant with God.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them didn't. And I don't know if I would be able to do that.
I've thought about that a lot as well with things like this. The people who died for their principles and their beliefs. And I'm just not sure I'd be able to.
No, I think it's nice to believe that you would be that brave and that good a person.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I would have been.
I don't think I would have been.
But they were.
They would have captured me and I would have gone, oh yeah, sorry, actually, never mind. You're God. Sure, sweet. Can I go home now?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I could do it. Especially knowing what the Covenanters went through.
Well, that doesn't help, does it?
I've done the research and there was a lot of bloodshed and it happened all over the country. Largely sort of down in the south of Scotland rather than up here with us. But it did happen everywhere. There were clashes all over the place. The Covenanters won some of them with their supporters. Charles's forces won some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of back and forth. Now, what's interesting is these battles and clashes included the Battle of Aldern.
Oh.
Which we mentioned in the witchcraft episode on Isabel Gowdie.
Yes, we did.
And we have been to the site of the battle.
Huh.
So that was one of those clashes.
Wow.
And in that battle, Charles's supporters beat the Covenanters.
Mm, that's a shame.
A little side note, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Huh. That was right round the corner from us.
Yeah.
However, King Charles I was executed in 1649 by the English Parliament.
Oh.
Did you know that?
Is that Cromwell?
Yes. He led the rebellion against Charles. Basically because he was just trying for total power. He was a tyrant.
Yeah.
And Parliament didn't agree with him. So yeah, he got executed. And the Covenanters actually accepted Charles II as their next king.
Hmm.
On the condition that he accepted Presbyterianism, which was the religion of the Covenanters.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, he wouldn't be allowed to enter Scotland.
Wow, that's bold.
Yeah, that was the deal. You accept us as we are, or you don't come in.
Hmm. Maybe we should do that to Boris Johnson.
Ooh, tempting. But what could we think of that he would never accept?
Hmm. Anything. Well, he's not going to accept a second referendum, so.
There we go, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
Now, at this time, or around then anyway, a man called George Mackenzie was made Lord Advocate in 1677. And it was his job to carry out the will of King Charles II, to uphold the law, mediating between the king and the Covenanters.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. But this is an important detail, which we're going to come back to later. So stick a pin in George Mackenzie.
He wasn't just smooshed up and put on toast for the Lord. As the Lord's avocado.
Oh my God, I didn't even get it. This was like Lord Advocate? What?
The Lord Avocado, continue.
You're such a millennial. Spreading George Mackenzie on toast. Anyway, he's important, so we'll get to him later.
Yes.
Okay. Now, initially, Charles II accepted the terms from the Covenanters. He said, okay, that's fine.
Sweet, fair enough.
But then he went back on the deal.
Ugh.
Like, why? Why?
Oh, why? Oh.
And this obviously upset the Covenanters.
Naturally.
And the years that followed were pretty brutal. Like, Presbyterians were removed from positions of power. They were removed from their parishes as ministers. They weren't allowed to preach anymore. And there was a process of bringing back bishops, which Presbyterians didn't want. So it's just trying to eradicate them completely. And they really didn't have a good time of it. Between 1679 and 1688, that period of time is referred to as the killing time.
No.
Seriously, I'm not even just making that up.
Why can't religions just let other religions do their thing?
I don't know. Now, some Presbyterian ministers who were threatened with being ousted from their church, some of them accepted the kind of wishy-washy allowances that were given to them. Basically, they were allowed to keep preaching if they stuck to this list of things they couldn't say or things they had to promote or exclude. Some of them accepted those allowances and kept preaching, but there were others who stood completely firm and said, absolutely not, I'm not bending to anything less than you accepting us as we are, which meant death for a lot of them. So there was a big sort of martyr movement. There was a lot of death in Presbyterianism at that time. So there were back and forth wins and losses on both sides until 1679 and the Battle of Bothwell Brigg,
which you've mentioned before in other episodes, and I can't.
Yes, yeah. But this was actually happened over the Clyde, the River Clyde, between Hamilton and Bothwell, so not far outside Glasgow. And this is a very important event in the history of Greyfriars Kirkyard. I haven't forgotten what we're actually here to talk about. But it all comes back around. In this battle, the Covenanters had about 6,000 men. But these men were not trained soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
They just had a cause and were passionate.
I think you were going to say trained swimmers, and so they couldn't get over the Clyde.
No. They weren't trained soldiers. They weren't synchronised swimmers. Just 6,000 men.
Mm-hmm.
The government forces, the supporters of King Charles II, actually had fewer men. They had about 5,000. But they were highly trained, and they knew exactly what they were doing when it came to warfare. So they were still a formidable opponent.
Yeah, and like 5,000 to 6,000, still pretty close.
Exactly, especially when the level of skill is so different. Now, the battle did actually take place on the bridge crossing the River Clyde, on Bothwell Brigg.
Wow.
Not ideal for combat. You don't have a lot of room. It's very narrow. And the Covenanters lasted about an hour. But they had to run. And unfortunately, 1,200 of them were taken prisoner.
Got routed.
This was pretty disastrous for them. They didn't really have a lot of hope.
Mm.
But can you guess where they were taken?
Where could they have been taken? Could it have been to Greyfriars Kirkyard?
Yes. They were taken to Greyfriars Kirkyard. And I know you know that, but I like to play the game anyway.
It's good fun. I was just thinking, in that battle on a bridge, I don't know how big this bridge is. Imagine fairly, not just one person wide.
No, I think wider than that, but still narrow.
But presumably it's not wide enough for 5,000-6,000 people to stand all at once.
No.
So at some point, you're going to be climbing over the bodies of your dead comrades to carry on fighting.
Yeah, probably.
Like, that's not going to be easy. Like, no wonder they got routed and then had to flee. Like, that would be too much. It's about, like, dead and injured people just all piling up on this bridge.
Well, I mean, you're not going to take the time to move them if they're injured, if it means you're going to die.
Or they're being climbed over by the opposing force.
Exactly.
That's just
pretty grim.
That's a lot to deal with.
Pretty
grim. That's a lot to face down and then be like, to still hold your courage.
Grim. To still believe in what you believed in before.
Hmm. Just a lot.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the Covenanter prisoners were taken to the graveyard. Not all of them. I said 1,200 were taken prisoner. About 400 of them were taken to the kirkyard because all the jails were full.
Well, that's still a lot because it's quite big, but it's not that big.
Yeah, it's still a lot of people, but it wasn't all of them is what I'm saying. I don't want to exaggerate.
Mm.
Prisons were not a good place in the 1600s. Trust me. But being held in the kirkyard was not better by any means at all.
Well, living conditions everywhere weren't great back then, unless you had a lot of money.
Well, yeah, unless you were stinking rich.
Mm-hmm.
The prisoners were kept outside all of the time, and they had absolutely no shelter, nothing to protect them. They were kept in a section of the graveyard that could be locked, so it's called the Covenanter's Prison. But there's a big wall that separates it from the rest of the kirkyard, and it could be locked. So that's where they were kept. And it's got walls on all sides. And one of these sides is the Flodden Wall, which was built during the reign of Mary, Queen of Scots, to keep the English out. And it's still there. You can still see it. So that's one side. So you've got walls on all sides. You've got this gate. And they were kept in here, rain or shine, nothing to keep them warm. A lot of the prisoners died there, either about exposure from the elements or ill treatment or starvation. It was just horrendous. And then if they died there, supposedly they were buried in unmarked graves in the poorer section of the graveyard, which I think is to the north. I can't remember.
I'm not sure which direction that is, but that was pointed out as the other side.
Okay. Well, where that was. It's a specific section of the graveyard that was sort of set aside for the poor, because if you were poor, you didn't get a big tomb or a big headstone. It was very different. So that's where they were buried. But the ones who didn't die in the Covenanters' prison were executed.
Is that better?
As traitors. Some of them, very few of them, managed to escape.
Wow.
But after getting a lot of shit for treating the Covenanters the way that he did, Charles II agreed to release some of them, even though they hadn't submit to his law about the church. However, this is all a bit dodge. 257 Covenanters were put on a ship that was headed for America, the New World. Basically, he had decided, fine, you know, you've been treated badly, that shouldn't have happened, but you're not playing ball, so I'm going to exile you to America. And I imagine they were pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
But the ship went down just, like, quite near Orkney, of all places. Now, I don't know if you know Scottish geography. Orkney is east. America is west. And that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
It might do. You might get better tides and better currents and stuff if you go out there.
Well, that's not my only bit of evidence as to why this is a bit dodge.
Well, that's right, because planes, it's not the same, but planes fly north and then go across.
Oh, that's
true,
they get
better cross streams.
Well,
anyway.
All in this downing of the ship, almost all of them drowned. Apparently there were some survivors, which I didn't realise. But apparently archaeologists have found evidence from the wreck that's still there that the ship that had all the prisoners on it sustained cannon fire.
Wow.
Which probably contributed to the sinking, because it was hit by cannons.
Well, it would, wouldn't it?
But what's even worse is that the ships escorting this prisoner ship were armed with cannons.
Ooh. So they just turned around and minced it.
That's what it looks like.
Oof. Oh.
It seems like they were never going to be able to just live their lives.
Grim.
So you can make of that what you will. There's a memorial to them in Orkney that you can go visit. That's still there. But yeah, this is definitely one of, if not the darkest moment in the history of the Kirkyard. Like, what happened to the Covenanters there was really brutal and really awful. But since then, the Kirkyard's remained a really important part of Edinburgh's culture and its history from then right the way through. And there are several important figures buried there. And I've picked a couple of them to talk to you about.
Oh.
If you're interested.
No. End of the episode.
Well, guys, it was nice talking to you, but Kieran's decided that this is the end of the episode.
Actually, that's fine. That's plenty of information. We're good.
Well, I'm going to tell you about these important figures before we get to the spooky stuff.
Spook.
One of the important graves that's in the Kirkyard belongs to a man called William McGonagall, who lived from 1825 to 1902. But
pretty good.
I have such a soft spot for him. He has such a cruel reputation.
Oh.
So I really want to include him in the episode. He was born in Edinburgh to Irish parents, but he spent most of his life in Dundee.
Okay.
He didn't live in Edinburgh for all that long. And unfortunately for William, he is known globally as the world's worst poet.
Oh.
I read someone call him the worst poet in the history of the English language.
Wow. That's good work.
He was ripped to shreds and ridiculed pretty much his entire career. But he never gave up and he never accepted defeat. He kept writing. He was completely committed to poetry. he wanted to write and he wanted people to hear and read his work.
I respect that.
Right? This has been so difficult. Now, he was so confident in himself and his abilities.
Mm-hmm.
He tried breaking into Balmoral while Queen Victoria was there. Because he believed she would love his poems.
Very nice.
Tennyson, the famous poet, had just died.
Mm-hmm.
So William thought he would make a great next poet laureate now that Lord Alfred Tennyson was dead. And he turned up at Balmoral, but was unfortunately told the Queen wasn't there, so he left.
Yeah, that's a bummer, that. Walk all the way there.
I know.
What if we get known as the world's worst podcast and we just keep doing it anyway?
Oh, I don't know if I've got the strength.
That'd be tough. Well, there you go. That's pretty good.
Right.
That's a good one.
At one point, he tried to claim that he was gifted this great jewel by the King of Burma at the time, along with a title that came with the jewel, and the title was Sir Topaz, Knight of the White Elephant.
That's a good title.
But it was all made up.
Yeah.
Apparently, I can't remember exactly what I read. He had read it in a Chaucer poem.
Oh, yeah.
The title and the white elephant. So it seemed like he quite enjoyed that, so was trying to draw upon another poet's work.
Mm-hmm.
But he was never given a jewel by the King of Burma, unfortunately.
The King of Burma wasn't just wandering through Edinburgh.
Well, he may have been, but he did not meet William McGonagall. Unfortunately, one of the things that people didn't like about poor William was that he would write about really important and terrible events that happened during his lifetime. Mm-hmm. But he never treated them with the weight or seriousness that they deserved.
Oh.
So he wrote a poem about the Tay Bridge disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you wanted to hear a bit of it.
Sure.
To kind of show you what I mean.
Well, I'm not very good with poetry anyway, so this might just be poetry to me. Well, but we'll try it anyway.
I mean, I feel like you'll be able to tell what the problem is.
Yeah, okay.
Bear in mind that this is about the Tay Bridge disaster, which we may do an episode on at some point separately. But here we go. Beautiful railway bridge of the Silvery Tay. Alas, I am very sorry to say that 90 lives have been taken away on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time.
I mean, I don't know much about poetry, but that's not great, is it?
'Twas about 7 o'clock at night, and the wind it blew with all its might, and the rain came pouring down, and the dark clouds seemed to frown, and the demon of the air seemed to say, I'll blow down the Bridge of Tay. So the train moved slowly along the Bridge of Tay until it was about midway. Then the central girders with a crash gave way, and down went the train and passengers into the Tay. The storm fiend did loudly bray because 90 lives had been taken away on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. As soon as the catastrophe came to be known, the alarm from mouth to mouth was blown, and the cry rang out all over the town, Good heavens, the Tay Bridge is blown down. And a passenger train from Edinburgh, which filled all the people's hearts with sorrow, I made them for to turn pale, because none of the passengers were saved to tell the tale, how the disaster happened on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. It must have been an awful sight to witness in the dusky moonlight, while the storm fiend did laugh and angry did bray along the railway bridge of the Silvery Tay. Oh, ill-fated bridge of the Silvery Tay, I must now conclude my lay by telling the world fearlessly, without the least dismay, that your central girders would not have given way, at least many sensible men do say, had they been supported on each side with buttresses. At least many sensible men confesses, for the stronger we our houses do build, the less chance we have of being killed.
Well, that's quite something.
There's a lot to think about.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So the Tay Bridge disaster was horrific.
Yeah, he's no Robbie Burns, is he?
He's not really given it the tone.
No, it's more just a statement of fact, almost.
Mm-hmm.
These people died and the bridge blew down, but if they built it better, it wouldn't have blown down.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were very upset by that, as you would expect. He also tried to use his poems to warn people about how terrible drinking alcohol was.
Oh.
But he decided to do this. He would write his poems. Sorry, great. But then he would read these poems aloud in packed bars.
Very nice.
And they never went down well.
They're probably about as effective as the current adverts, where they have all the advert about alcohol and then throw on at the end, please drink responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
About as effective as doing that, really.
Or just he's turning up and trying to ruin everyone's good time.
I know, what killjoy.
Yeah. But he did it. He was committed to doing it.
I mean, standing by his beliefs.
And he did all kinds of things. He travelled to America at one point.
Well.
You know, as a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And quite often when he was giving his poetry recitals, he dressed himself up in full Highland formal dress.
Quite the sight.
The big shebang. And he was really well known. Like, everyone knew who he was. But he's definitely more appreciated now than he ever was when he was alive. Because everyone hated him when he was alive.
Yeah.
So William's grave is in Greyfriars Kirkyard.
Hmm.
And it's a bit odd because his headstone is in what's considered a pretty prestigious part of the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
But when he died, he didn't have any money.
Hmm.
So it seems likely that he's not actually buried where his headstone is.
No.
But he gets visited regularly. He's got a big cult following now.
No doubt.
Which is all he ever wanted.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's William McGonagall. Another famous resident of the graveyard is someone you've likely heard of if you know anything about Edinburgh. Greyfriars Bobby.
I have heard of him.
Of course you've heard of Greyfriars
Bobby. I have heard of him. I know him.
Now this is a much loved story. There are lots of different versions, so don't shout at me if the one that you've heard before is different to what I'm about to tell you. John Grey was a policeman, a night watchman, who was working in Edinburgh in the mid-1800s. And John Grey had a little Skye Terrier, so they're quite small, grey, they've got long hair, who he loved dearly, and the Skye Terrier was called Bobby. And Bobby used to follow him around at night when he was on his beat. He would trot after him. And they kept Edinburgh safe.
Very good.
Eerily, this was about 20 to 30 years after the Burke and Hare murders.
Oh, wow.
So that had all happened. And he's still a night watchman in Edinburgh. Ugh. Which I thought was spooky.
That is spooky.
Now, there is another theory out there that John Grey, who had Bobby, was actually a farmer. Because there were two John Greys at the time. So there are some versions where he's a farmer. In this one, he's a night watchman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John died in 1858. He had been really unwell. And apparently Bobby, wee Bobby, was so heartbroken that he refused to leave John's grave after the burial service. Which was an issue, because dogs were not allowed in the kirkyard.
Mm-hmm.
So poor Bobby got the boot. However, in true terrier form, Bobby kept finding a way back in. Sort of worming through little places that nobody could see because they weren't as small as a dog.
He's only wee, he'll fit right in.
Exactly. So the people in charge of the kirkyard had to keep getting rid of him, but they found that the hearts were softening when they saw that Bobby was at the grave. No matter the weather, rain, snow, wind, he was always there. So they made him a little shelter beside the grave to keep him warmer and drier while he was on his little vigil.
That's nice.
Right?
Yeah.
They stopped kicking him out. And in the end, Bobby ended up with a pretty good routine. He'd spend most of the day at the kirkyard, but when the 1 o'clock gun went off at Edinburgh Castle, the cannon, he would trot down the little hill beside the graveyard to one of the shops or cafes and he'd get his lunch.
It's all right, isn't it?
Which sounds like Odin's dream.
Yeah, definitely.
Just being able to rock up to a cafe and be like, feed me.
And I'd be like, sure.
In 1867... people started getting a bit worried because a law was passed that meant all dogs had to have a license. This was to try and minimise the number of strays that were in the city. And if a dog didn't have a license, they might be bumped off. Now, Bobby didn't have an owner anymore, so who would pay for a license for him?
That's the question.
Who do you think?
The city of Edinburgh.
The Lord Provost paid for Bobby's dog license.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. He paid for his license and he gave him a collar which you can still see in the Museum of Edinburgh.
Oh.
It has a little tag on it. I can't remember exactly what it says. But he was basically adopted by the city, and the Lord Provost paid for this. And I even heard that Queen Victoria herself came to see Bobby.
Wow.
After hearing about his devotion and how committed he was to John Gray. And Bobby stayed by the grave until 1872, when Bobby was about 16 years old.
Was this the same Queen Victoria who wore black for yes. like 60 years? Oh, well, see, she'd be right there with him. I feel you.
You and me, we just have this connection.
Yeah, you know what it is to have lost a loved one and to spend the rest of your life in honour of them.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Mm.
I think Prince Albert would have been dead by then. Anyway, Bobby was loved by the entire city, and the story captivated everyone who heard it, because it's so lovely.
How could it not?
There's a statue of Bobby just outside the kirkyard across the road, and there's a headstone for Bobby just inside the gates of the kirkyard beside John. Even though Bobby wasn't actually buried there, because there's rules about burying animals in the kirkyard. You're not allowed to do it.
I mean, it's fair.
Isn't that a lovely story?
That is a lovely story.
If you don't want the story ruined, skip ahead a few minutes now.
They tested Bobby's nose, the statue, for COVID, and it came back positive at one point during the pandemic.
The statue.
Yeah. Little Greyfriars Bobby statue had
COVID. Well, if you know dogs, you know that 16 is a ripe old age for a dog. Very impressive. Especially for a dog that lived on the streets in all kinds of weather. And there were rumours that every now and then, when Bobby wasn't well, he would be given some special care out in the country on a farm. And then he would come back looking brand new.
He looked new. He looked younger. He looked a slightly different colour, weirdly.
Now, you can believe what you want to believe. I really love the story.
Yeah.
So I'm choosing to believe that Bobby was really that loyal.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem a bit...
optimistic.
Unlikely. Now, you mentioned there's a statue to Bobby just outside the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people come to visit it and rub his nose for good luck that the metal is starting to wear away. So aside from the COVID risk, because Bobby had COVID, if you go to visit, please just pat him on the head or the back. Don't rub his nose, because the statue's just getting wrecked.
Just don't touch him, he'll bite.
He'll bite you with the COVID. Now, I've also kept this just for you, Kieran.
Oh.
But apparently, there's a talking dog in Terry Pratchett's Discworld series called Gaspode.
Oh, yeah. There is.
Well, he's inspired by the story of Greyfriars Bobby.
There you go.
That's just for you.
That's fun. I'm a great lover of Terry Pratchett, so yes. I appreciate that.
I saw it and had to include it, even though it's not to do with the kirkyard at all. But if you've listened this far, you aren't here just for lovely stories of puppies and poetry.
No.
You're here for the spooks.
And if you haven't listened this far, well, you're not listening now, so we can say whatever we want about you. Screw you for not listening this far.
How dare you skip. Well, I'm here to deliver this week. We're both here to deliver the spooks this week. But I am especially proud of all the spookiness that we have.
There's some good spooking.
Greyfriars is famous for being one of the most haunted places in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly the world. Especially with its more recent reputation. Do you remember when I briefly mentioned George Mackenzie, the Lord Advocate for King Charles II?
The Avocado, yes.
The Avocado, yes. Well, I said before that he was basically the king's lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
He was extremely smart, well-read, and he did all kinds of things. He was born in Dundee in 1636, and before he became Lord Advocate, he was knighted. He was a member of the Scottish Parliament, and he was the MP for the County of Ross, which is up here. From what I can see, actually, his title is Lord George Mackenzie of Rosehawk. And that's an estate which he had near Auch in the Black Isle.
Oh.
Which is only about 30 minutes from here. In 1660, he published a book called Aretina, which to some people is seen as the first Scottish novel.
Hmm.
In 1661, he was involved in witch trials that took place in Midlothian, where he actually defended a woman who was being accused of being a witch.
There you go.
And he wasn't as cuckoo bananas as everybody else was. He believed that witches were real, but he felt very strongly that there weren't as many witches as were being tried. He felt that...
A fair assumption.
Yeah, most people who were being brought were completely innocent. And he didn't believe that every person who was brought to court was a witch.
Uh-huh.
And he also held the rare opinion that if you got a confession of someone being a witch that came after they had been tortured, then it wasn't legal and it wasn't truthful.
Hmm.
And it wasn't enough to convict someone on.
Ahead of his time.
Yes, it doesn't sound like as big a deal today, but back then, huge.
Mm-hmm. And, that still happens. Like, you say it's more rare now, but... Like, that was all the problems in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, exactly. So, he had this opinion all the way back then. And if you've listened to the witchcraft series, you know the kind of things that happened to them if you were accused of being a witch.
Yeah.
Awful. In 1678, he literally wrote the book on Scottish law.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
It was a textbook called Laws and Customs of Scotland in Matters Criminal. And it was the first textbook of Scottish law ever.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy that Edinburgh... had him, and then it was Adam Smith who founded modern economics, and James Hutton,
geologist,
was the geologist, modern day geology. It's pretty cool. They all came from Edinburgh.
Quite an incredible time to be alive. Oh, he was actually born in Dundee.
Oh, well, I suppose if you were operating in Edinburgh, because that's where the government and stuff was.
He was based in Edinburgh largely, but an incredible time to be alive. Mm-hmm. So he was a very impressive man. But absolutely none of this is what he's known for.
Naturally.
Eventually, this learned, reasonable, practical man would earn the name Bloody Mackenzie.
Mm.
And it would be for the things that took place in the kirkyard.
It's not as friendly as that bloody dog, as you say about your own dog.
No.
When he eats your newspaper, that bloody dog.
George Mackenzie did a lot worse than eat a newspaper.
Mm. Oh, that bloody Mackenzie. He's always nicking my paper.
I talked about the fate of the Covenanters earlier, about how awfully they were treated, mainly by the guards who were watching them. Like, they abused them and didn't feed them. And that was happening in the kirkyard, remember? Mm-hmm. Well... George Mackenzie was the one ultimately responsible for them being arrested and locked up and executed and shipped off, because he was the Lord Advocate.
Mm-hmm.
So if the king wanted something done, he was the one that had to enforce the king's laws. That was his job. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, even though he wasn't the one who was in the kirkyard hurting these people, he was the one who had laid down the law. And I read somewhere that he could have been responsible for 18,000 deaths.
Oh my days, that's so many.
Mm-hmm. Now, not directly. I'm not saying that he ever murdered anybody or laid hands on anybody, but that was the nature of his job. Because he was enforcing the will of a madman, basically.
Well, when you're enforcing the law, and the law often results in death, that will happen, won't it?
It's a horrible position to be in.
Yeah.
So after all of that, after the life that he had led, where do you think he was buried?
Beside St. Giles Cathedral?
Nope.
Hmm. In the River Clyde?
Nope.
Hmm. Oh, the kirkyard.
George Mackenzie was buried in Greyfriars Kirkyard, right beside the area of the cemetery now known as the Covenanter's Prison. If you stand at the gates to the Covenanter's Prison, if you look to your left, you can see George Mackenzie's tomb.
Mm-hmm.
That's how close they are. He was buried right next to where all those people were treated so badly.
And we were there. It's very close.
Yes. Now, Kieran and I have very different views. You might not get this. But spiritually, that's about as bad as it gets. Everything about that just feels wrong. Now, George Mackenzie actually designed his own tomb.
Hmm.
So he actually got to see it before he died. Like, he is buried there on purpose. He wanted to be buried there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of Grecian or Roman inspired. There's columns and it has a big domed roof. It's very grand.
Mm-hmm.
He had that built.
Weird.
Very.
I mean, he can't design it after he dies. So.
No, but it's a weird thought.
Mm-hmm. very pragmatic.
Yeah, and he had probably spent a lot of time in and around there. The kirkyard itself is very peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice place to be buried, really. But, yeah, he's buried really close to where they were all held.
I mean, it might have been the only space.
Could have been.
It's all packed.
Yeah, it is. There's about 500 headstones in Greyfriars Kirkyard. Mm. And there's about 500,000 bodies.
Yeah. They don't know how many.
To give you some context. It's about that. Let's jump ahead to 1999. Bloody Mackenzie has been sleeping peacefully for about 300 years. Because he died in 1691. It's a cold night. Dark. Quiet. And a homeless man is looking for somewhere to spend the night. Now, this was quite common in the kirkyard because there's lots of large headstones, tombs, places where you could find some shelter
against shelter.
Wind and rain. Lots of trees, that kind of thing. Now, this man is wandering around the kirkyard and he spots a particularly large tomb with a domed roof. Looks good. Plenty of room in there for him to sleep.
Absolutely.
He manages to crack open the door. And he makes his way into the tomb. He's already a lot braver than me. Now, the tomb is circular.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing in there, really. No statues, no nothing. The floor's empty. Except from a grate on the floor. And this grate led to the lower level of the tomb. Now, you have to assume that he was similar to the type of person that we are. Who would be interested in spooky stories and was just generally a curious cat, because he goes down there into a tomb underground. Now, when he got down there, he found four coffins all lying in a row, and some were bigger than others. But from here is where I hope the similarities between someone listening to this and that man end, because he thought it would be a good idea to break into the coffins, since it had been undisturbed for a very long time, and it was quite likely that someone buried in a tomb like this would have had lots of money and might have valuables on them. But somewhere in this effort, the poor man fell through the floor into what was a pit of bodies. And I can't imagine that too much because it just gives me the spooks.
Yeah, just a bit much, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. He has fallen into a pit of bodies, completely underground and in the dark. Now, while all this is happening, there's a security guard who's watching the kirkyard overnight. And he's walking around, he's making sure there's no nonsense happening, when he starts to hear banging. And he can't figure it out, but realises before too long that the banging is coming from one of the tombs. Now, for me, that's worst case scenario. I'm leaving and going home and quitting my job. For him, you know, it could just be kids. It could be anything. So he has to go check. There's some reports that he had a dog with him, so he's going around with the dog. And he seems to... he thinks it's coming from this Mackenzie tomb in particular. He can hear the noises getting louder and louder. So he gets closer, and the banging does get louder and louder. He's standing right outside. And then, as he gets closer, he starts hearing screaming and crying out from this tomb in a graveyard. So now he's getting nervous. He gets closer to the door, closer, when the door opens without him touching it. And a dusty, ghostly, ragged figure appears in front of him, and the figure is shouting and screaming. So the security guard reacts the only appropriate way. He screams, "Zombie!" and bolts from the tomb, while the zombie bolts in the other direction. The homeless man had managed to climb out of the tomb, and had gotten as much of a fright as the security guard had when he opened the door and saw someone standing staring at him.
Yeah, shining a torch in his face.
Yes, so the two men ran in opposite directions, and if they had any sense, neither of them would have gone back. I wouldn't have. So that happened. The Mackenzie tomb was open, and coffins had been disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
Later in 2003, two boys were caught after sneaking into the same tomb. And they decided, I have no idea who would think this is a good idea, why this would be a fun game, But they started messing with the remains. So they opened the coffins and they were messing with the skeletons and the remains that were there. And one of them went so far as to break a skull from a skeleton. They took it out of the tomb and they started basically playing football with it and like just mucking about. And they got caught. They got caught. And the police, they either threatened to charge them or did charge them with an old law,
mm-hmm.
which makes it illegal to desecrate a body. Because they'd broken into a tomb and stolen a skull.
I think they were charged.
Well, I can't remember if they just got like a warning or...
Because they got charged with desecrating the tomb of George Mackenzie.
Oh, yes. Yes, they did. Now, these on their own would just be some fun, spooky stories. But since that happened, since 1999, strange things have been felt, seen, heard in the kirkyard that weren't happening before then. People who were visiting the cemetery started leaving with scratches, bruises, seeing figures that weren't really there, and not being able to breathe, hearing footsteps, hearing whispers, everything you could imagine, people started experiencing, largely in that one area of the graveyard where Mackenzie's tomb is and the Covenanters' prison.
Mm-hmm.
That was where it was all happening. Now, a man called Jan Andrew Henderson has been studying the Mackenzie Poltergeist for a very long time. He's the reason that we have the name. In his book, The Ghost That Haunted Itself, he called the ghost the mm-hmm. Mackenzie Poltergeist, and it stuck. Now, he believes that since the tomb was disturbed, it's George Mackenzie's ghost haunting the graveyard, not able to rest
mm-hmm.
because of where he is and what he did. That's the theory. And like I said, Henderson studied the graveyard and the poltergeist for a very, very long time. He's documented all kinds of things. He's the one who started the City of the Dead Tour Company. And they are the only tour group that has a key and is allowed to go into the Covenanters' prison, which is what we got to do.
Yep.
Now, Henderson actually claims that his house caught fire and it destroyed everything. All of the documentation he had about the haunting, everything. He believes it's the poltergeist's fault that his house burnt down.
Spooked all the way home.
Ooh. No, not home. There's no home left.
Oh, well, he did get spooked home. And then there's it burned no home. Down. Yeah.
There is a common misconception that I wanted to talk about because it gets mixed up in a lot of the stories. The Mackenzie Mausoleum is different to a place called the Black Mausoleum.
Mm-hmm.
The Mackenzie Mausoleum has the dome top. And anyone can go and stand outside that. It's not in the locked part of the kirkyard.
Mm-hmm.
The Black Mausoleum is a different haunted spot in the cemetery where a lot of people have felt things and seen things and heard things. It's in the locked part in the Covenanters' prison.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Black Mausoleum. And it's a hot spot with no discernible reason as to why. If I remember rightly, it's the tomb of the Dundas family. But they have no link to the Mackenzie,
mm-hmm.
nothing. But people go in there and pass out, or they've been injured in some way, they've been talked to, all kinds of stuff. Overall, the City of the Dead tours have had over 100 people pass out on a tour with no medical reason for it.
Yeah.
And more than 350 documented attacks since 1999, with photos and statements and all kinds of things. One of the big things they talk about on the tour is that this is the best documented haunting
mm-hmm.
anywhere. Because they have all of these testimonials and all these pictures.
Well, because people go on the tour and they get all these weird scratches and stuff and then yeah. they take photos of them after.
Now, what's the most exciting part of this whole story for me is that Kieran and I got to visit the kirkyard. We went on a City of the Dead tour.
Yes, we did.
And we got spooked. And now we can talk about it. So what's nice is for the first time in a podcast, Kieran knows all about this.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk to you off script just about our experience and what it was like going on the tour.
It was spooky.
If that's all you're going to say, I'm going to punch you. So yeah, we are now in uncharted territory. I have no script in front of me.
Oh.
We're just going to do it.
We'll do it live.
I will get my notes, though. I'm not a complete maniac.
Oh, can't go too off the deep end.
So yeah, we were extremely lucky because I reached out to Jamie, and he's the manager of City of the Dead Tours now.
Mm-hmm.
And I reached out to him initially just to have a chat, but he invited us down to take a tour.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing and absolutely loved it.
Yep. It was a tour of the Kirkyard and the Vault, which are some of underground Edinburgh. We won't go too much into them because this is about the Kirkyard. Very interesting, though.
Unless you want to. I mean, we could talk about the spooks a little bit.
Do some of the spooks. Do you know what a spook?
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't really know where to start. First, we should say that our tour guide, Beck, was phenomenal.
Yeah, Rebecca, she was wonderful. She did amazing. A great job. And a big thank you to City of the Dead Tours.
Yeah, to everybody.
And Jamie and Rebecca. For
because it was incredible.
Mm-hmm. And we got to speak to Jamie the next day, in the daylight as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we really appreciate the time. We really appreciate the chance.
And if you're in Edinburgh, you should definitely do one of their tours.
You should.
Phenomenal.
Well, yeah, we took a tour.
We did. We went down to Edinburgh and took the tour. And it was really good. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Very interesting. Because should we go through it when we start?
I don't really want to go into too much detail because then you won't take the tour.
Oh, yeah, you won't need to.
But Kieran was right. You start and you go through the Edinburgh Vaults, which is all underground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the old bridge, the South Bridge. You go underground and it was really interesting hearing about the stories down there, about how people used to live. And then you come out of the vaults again, and that's when you go to the Kirkyard later in the night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this time of year it was just getting dark by the time we got there.
So it was perfect because it wasn't too cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to the vaults and I got spooked.
You did get spooked. I did not get spooked.
Kieran doesn't get spooked.
No, the tour guide and Jamie both have a theory that you're either born with it or you're not. The ability to feel the supernatural and such like. And that everyone has a different receptivity. And Rebecca's word, she's about as receptive as a ham sandwich.
Which sums up you perfectly.
I know, I'm like, oh, that's me.
Well, yeah, I got spooked for sure. Should I tell it? Or?
Well, you got spooked. Otherwise, I'm there. I was standing by Daily and she was being weird.
But will it be more genuine if you tell it? I don't know.
I think you should go for it.
Okay, well,
We were in the vaults, we're underground, and we're in this little room hearing about how people lived there, and it was terrible conditions. And there's all sorts of horrible things going on, like baby farms. Pregnant women who are without a man in their life to help support them would be cared for, taken care of, and then their baby would be taken away.
Mm-hmm. So
all sorts of horribleness.
It was horrendous. It was absolutely horrendous. And you felt heart sorry hearing about it. Mm-hmm. And the guide was busy talking about the ghost of this woman that people have seen in there. And we're listening very carefully. And the guide, surprisingly, I felt okay. Like, I needed Kieran to stand behind me for quite a lot of it, just so that I knew nothing was going to come up behind me. Because I'm a baby. Yeah. But I felt largely okay. Like, usually ghost tours or things where there's a jump scare possible really freaks me out. It's freaked me out since I was little. I can't handle it. But I was surprisingly okay in there. And then she was talking about this woman. And honest to God, I felt a little hand on the back of my left knee. The hand was about the size of my palm. So it was small. It was definitely a child-sized palm. And I felt it just grab onto the back of my knee where the tendon is on the outside of my knee. And it was really strange. And it was definitely a hand. I felt fingers. I had tights on. So it wasn't jeans rubbing or anything like that.
It wasn't me.
No. Because I made Kieran promise that he wouldn't do anything like that. Because I would never forgive you. But yeah, I felt that. I felt it was a hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then I nearly jumped out of my skin because like a few seconds later, a woman who was on the tour, all by herself, by the way.
I know.
She was on her own. She suddenly jerked forward as if she had dropped something and was trying to catch it before it hit the ground. So it was very, you remember, it was very sudden, it was very quick.
It was a jerk just down to the floor.
Yeah. And everyone around jumped the same way that we did because it was so sudden.
Everyone just kind of looked at her, and then the woman giving the tour, because she was shining a torch like in her own face for dramatic effect.
Which was amazing. She did such a good job.
Yeah, so she may not have seen, she just carried on until someone went, are you okay? Mm-hmm.
And then she explained that something had grabbed her arm and had pulled her forward.
Yeah, it was a small hand on her hand,
mm-hmm.
had pulled her forwards.
So I nearly lost it because I hadn't said a word about what I had felt. And then the girl who was maybe a foot, 2 feet in front of me.
Right in front of you.
She said it was a little hand and it pulled on her arm. And like down to the ground. So it was really, really creepy.
That was creepy.
I've never had anything like that before. Ever. Not like that.
Not physical.
No, like I felt it. I felt it. It was a hand. And then she just went.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't say anything to anyone. I was too embarrassed. It's a really weird feeling.
Yeah. And then you were telling me, and I just couldn't be there for you in the way you needed.
I could not have had anyone who was less supportive in that moment.
Oh, man.
Sad.
Weird. Feeling things. Ooh, spooky.
Yeah, and just, you can tell by the tone, but the face matched. It was just unimpressed.
Yeah, just, Yeah. You know, like when you're telling your parents something and they're not really listening. Oh, yeah.
So I felt that in the vaults. Mm-hmm. You did not feel anything.
I did not feel anything.
And we came out of the vaults and then we were heading to the kirkyard
mm-hmm.
for the night. And by then, like Kieran said, it had gotten dark. It's September now, so
mm-hmm.
this was about 10 o'clock, maybe?
It was like 9.
I can't remember.
Because we finished at 10.
Got you. So we went into the kirkyard and we're all standing round Greyfriars Bobby's headstone
mm-hmm.
and we're chatting and by then all the streetlights are on and everything and Beck's doing a really lovely job telling us about Greyfriars Bobby, and I think I told you afterwards, I don't think I told you at the time, but we were facing the headstones and I kept looking off to the left
mm.
and further away where it was really dark and I didn't like it. I don't want to look over there, but I kept looking. I didn't like it. And Beck finished telling her story and then said that's when we were going to the Covenanter's prison. And then she started heading in that direction. And my stomach just dropped. I didn't want to go. I did not want to go over there at all. Like, not even a little.
And I was just laughing because she says sometimes she'll look over and there's people just having sex in the graveyard. There's just naked bodies. She's like, well, everyone, let's go the other way quickly.
Yeah, shining a torch over on these like, ghostly forms, writhing, and then realises that
there's just some people doing it in the graveyard.
Yeah. I think she said there was one time she had to like tell people, please don't take photos. So yeah, you were fine. But we were heading over in that direction and I didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it. I felt awful that I had been looking over there and then that's where we were going. And the tour kept going, we were going through.
Mm-hmm.
She told us about a couple of the Harry Potter graves, which, I mean, there's a couple of names that have similar surnames. It's not exactly...
I know. There's Tom Riddle's grave.
I don't know, I wouldn't go all that way just to see a grave that may or may not have inspired Harry Potter.
But to each their own.
Yeah. Yeah. So we headed to the Covenanter's prison and we were standing outside the lock gate and... I felt like that was when she really changed the tone. It became a lot darker.
Mm.
Not morbid, not gory, but just more serious than she had been. And that was when she started talking about sort of the people who like felt things or passed out, all that kind of stuff, just outside. And then she opened up the gates. And I remember it like squeaking as we went in.
It's a big creaky old gate.
We were going in and I just felt awful. I did not want to be there at all. And the Black Mausoleum is a couple of tombs down mm-hmm. from the gate on the left.
Also locked with a...
Also locked,
with a gate.
So please don't try to break in. I feel like you shouldn't have to say that.
Yeah.
Please don't. Like, they're the only ones with a key for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. We're standing outside the Black Mausoleum and she's opening up the door and I know we're going to have to go in there and I don't want to go in there.
So everyone into the black mausoleum, put your masks on for COVID.
Yes, yes. So,
put our masks on.
Anytime we were, because when we were in the vaults, we had to have the masks on. And when we all went in the mausoleum, we had to have the masks on. Because it's a lot, there's 30 people-ish.
Yeah, it was a very big group.
The max group you can have in the Kirkyard now is 36 people, I saw. So it was about 30.
And she's hamming up, going like, no, if you feel like you're going to pass out, just come and tell me. If it feels too much, like, yes, come and say, and we'll take you into the fresh
room. Yes, if you feel dizzy, if you feel like you're going to pass out, please tell me so I can get you out of the tomb that you're going to be in.
Laying it on.
And I don't know why I let this happen, but for some reason, with where we were standing listening to her, we were some of the first to go in.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to go to the back.
Yep.
And I don't know why I let that happen. That was really stupid.
We were at the back, and then she began going, most of the activity happens to people at the back.
Yeah, and I
felt you just, like, vibrate with fear.
It was awful. It was so dark. So you were very kind to me because you stood right at my back.
Yeah, I stood behind you again.
And you sort of leant against the back wall.
Yeah, because my backpack hit the back wall.
Yeah, so it made me feel better. Just
protect.
Well, yeah, like nothing's going to come up behind me. You're right there. I don't need to worry about what I can't see. And I felt like I could cope with that. It was it was good. And, you know, it was pretty full. There was enough space to sort of move your elbows around, but it was pretty packed with everybody in there. And Beck was standing at the door talking into us and just telling us about some of the things that people have felt in there. And I'm trying not to panic because I just don't want to be there at all. And she's busy. I'm seeing you looking at me. I feel... Oh, it's completely
useless. Well, she was telling all that, and she was saying that, oh yeah, sometimes people feel like a figure standing beside them. And I felt compelled to look over, because you were kind of like slightly in front to the right of me. So I looked to the left, and there was a guy standing beside me who was just looking to the right, and we just sort of both made like this really weird eye contact. It was like, yeah, it's a bit spooky here. See if there's anyone between us.
Poor guy, he was like in the corner.
Yeah.
He was braver than me.
Maybe we looked at each other like, are you real? I'm real. Are you? Yeah.
Maybe you're looking at each other like, don't you try anything.
I think it's spooky.
Don't you do it.
Spooky in here, right?
So yeah, she was talking about that. Like, sort of, you see figures, or some people have been scratched in there, bruised. I read later in Jan's book. He's written several books. I bought a copy of The Ghost That Haunted Itself. And in that, there's written versions of some accounts. And in one of them, there was a woman who was in there who was standing near the back where we were, and she felt as if a hand was over her mouth and nose, and she stopped breathing and passed out.
Crazy.
She woke up outside, like they'd had to take her out. And she, like, she remembers feeling that way and trying to get the attention of the people around her, but she couldn't speak and she couldn't breathe.
Weird.
And she just passed out. So people have felt really awful things in there. And like listening to Beck, and I'm trying not to panic. Just trying to sort of go to my special place. And Kieran says something to me in his usual way if we're listening to something somewhat important and he wants to make a joke about it.
And I have something stupid to say.
Yeah, like he'll sort of lean closer to my ear to not be rude. And he'll whisper it to me. So he did that, but I didn't hear what he said, so I turned round. And I went, what? And
you were just looking at me. I didn't say anything. And you give me this look. I didn't say anything. Like, I promise. I know you think I said something. I did not say anything. I've just been listening to the tour.
And honest to God, it was you. You had whispered in my ear. I felt your breath on my face, and I felt the little sort of baby hairs by my ear move.
And a mask on as well.
Yeah, so I turned around and just went, what? And you didn't repeat what you said because...
So I didn't say anything.
Because you didn't speak.
You got spooked.
I did. And I didn't even have the presence of mind to be scared at the time because I was so convinced it was you.
Mm-hmm.
So I just turned and it was no big deal.
I could just see your eyes go wide and like your mouth dropped open. I could see in your mask.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
Then, like, you're like, okay, sweet. We'll just carry on listening to the tour guide talk about stuff.
This is fine.
She's like, oh, yeah, and people often, like, report, like, whispering in their ear that they can't understand. And you again did a full body vibrate when she said, what?
Well, for me, it was awful because, again, I didn't say anything. I just kept it to myself that I had said to you. I kept it to myself, and then she said that without any prompting from me, and I just about lost it. I could not deal.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't deal with the reality of what had just happened, because I was so convinced that it was you talking to me sort of quietly. So for it not to have been you, when there's no way anyone could have done it, there was no one who could be standing between us, because like, we were standing beside each other.
Uh-huh. How raging would you be if I was like, okay, it was me?
Oh, I would really struggle to forgive you.
I mean, that's fair. It wasn't.
I would struggle, because I was so scared. So scared. So when she said that was sort of it over, I was quite glad to be getting out of there. Mm. I really didn't like it in there. I felt so uneasy. And yeah, again, like I didn't want to talk to her about it, and I don't really know why.
Just a bit embarrassing, yeah, almost, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't want to, because I didn't want to announce it to the group.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
I really don't.
So yeah, we had it out, and that was more or less it for that night. We went straight home.
Yes, and I didn't sleep a wink.
No, me neither, but the air conditioning was really loud in our hotel.
It's different reasons.
It's like there was a bag of stones rattling around and it was roasting without it on.
Yeah, but I couldn't sleep. I was on high alert all night. I kept thinking I was hearing things or that...
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think every time the air conditioning rattled, I could feel you freak out. So yeah. There'd be and this rattling and the bed was vibrating.
And it wasn't even because I'd fallen asleep and that woke me. It just... Mm. I was already awake. I was completely on edge. So that would happen and it just...
Yeah.
It was awful. I think I got a couple hours sort of... From about 5 or 6.
Slept something.
Oh, it was bad. It was bad. But then it was lovely because we got to go and talk to Jamie, who's the manager.
Yeah, he came in the next day and we went and saw him.
The following morning. But I couldn't tell him at the time, but when he suggested going back into the Covenanter's prison to get some peace to chat, I nearly cried.
Oh, that was so funny.
I didn't want to go back.
Because their little office is at the entrance to the graveyard.
Yes.
So yeah. I went back there and you're like, oh, man, easy about just going back.
I didn't want to go back to the cemetery at all.
Yeah. And it was totally different in the daytime because we hadn't been during the day before the tour at night. And we were chatting to him as we off. He's like, oh, I think we walk and get some peace. I'm like, oh, sweet.
Just so, because people were coming and asking him questions and wanting to book tickets and things. Mm. So we were getting interrupted. So it was better.
Yeah, so he wandered off and we were just wandering up towards the back corner. I'm like, he's got the keys. He's gonna take us in there.
I know.
And Hayley's going to freak her noggin.
I realised too late.
So he whipped out his key. Awful. He started undoing the lock and the gate. And I just looked over and, you all right? Yeah,
it'll be fine. But it was so nice. We chatted for about 2 hours.
Yeah, we went up to the back
then. And we just talked about everything to do with the cemetery and and the history. And he's so passionate about what he does.
Yeah.
He's got a real passion for the history of the kirkyard and the vaults. The vaults are sort of his special place, he was saying.
Yeah, and he does a lot to maintain it and stuff and make sure it's respected and looked after.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, although I didn't go back in the Black Mausoleum, I did.
There's pictures of me in there on Instagram.
Yes. I didn't go back in because I'm not insane.
I am.
But I feel like I conquered my own mountain by just going back into the locked section. Because I quite happily would have never gone back in there the rest of my life.
Gone back to Edinburgh.
I feel like I was very brave for not being like, oh, can we just sit out here?
Mm-hmm. And Jamie has a very interesting theory.
Yes.
About the... Mackenzie Poltergeist.
Yes. Do you want to tell it?
I would quite like to tell it.
This is you telling me the story on the podcast.
I mean, you've heard it already, but...
No, but I'm excited. Okay, guys, shut up.
Because Jamie has the key to that mausoleum.
The Mackenzie Mausoleum.
The Mackenzie Mausoleum. And the Black Mausoleum, but the Mackenzie one. He's been in there. And he went down to the tombs, and he saw there's the four of them. And then they also keep all the records of all the burials that have happened there, so they can see everything that's gone on. And so I believe he was putting back the skull after it had been taken.
Because the skull just got put to their office.
Yeah, it was just
initially
apparently quite a lot as people are walking around, they kick up bones.
It's very common.
Yeah, and because it's so full, and if there's heavy rain,
well, not everything is deep.
No,
like that's the problem.
There's just a little bit of topsoil, so bones get collected. They get given to Jamie, and he very respectfully reburies them.
I think there was a minister with him. I think a minister from Greyfriars went with him to rebury it.
Well, so he had the skull, and he's like, right, well, I'm going to give this back to George. He probably wants his head. So he went down, and he put it in the graveyard. They're back in the tomb, closed the lid over. It's okay, that's fine. And I believe they must have fixed the hole down to the other layer. But anyway, that doesn't really matter. But he looked at it and went, that's weird. This is quite a short one. Like, there's a much taller tomb beside this one.
Which was undisturbed.
Which was undisturbed.
The skull had been returned to quite a short coffin.
And George Mackenzie was supposed to have been 6 foot tall.
Mm-hmm. He was like 6 foot two, I think.
Yeah, very tall, towering man.
So he wouldn't fit in that coffin.
Oh, that's quite unusual. So he went back and checked through his records, amongst other things, and discovered that there's an Agnes Mackenzie, who's George's daughter, passed away, I think, before him, sadly, who's also buried in there.
So, and that's the disturbed coffin.
So he reckons that's the disturbed coffin. It's not George Mackenzie who was disturbed. It was his daughter, Agnes. I think it was Agnes.
Mm-hmm.
Or Annie.
Well, it's Agnes. She was his daughter. But I think in the internment records, he was saying that she was noted down as an Anna.
Oh,
was
that
on the
one, yeah,
wall of the tomb, it was Anna. So there was confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, he doesn't think that the poltergeist is George Mackenzie.
So it's either his daughter or he's, or Mackenzie's pissed off, not because his tomb was disturbed, because his daughter's tomb was disturbed, which I think is very interesting.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Completely wild.
But it can't be officially verified.
No, it's just a theory from what you can see. There's the four coffins in there, because it's a family tomb.
Yeah, as was the thing at the time.
But it makes sense, because he was so tall.
Yeah, I mean, Why would they be buried the other way around?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Very, very interesting.
And then what else was interesting, because we sat in the Covenanters prison having a lovely chat, as strange as that statement is to say.
It sounds absolutely bizarre, but it was very peaceful.
Yeah, and there were some squirrels running around. There's nice. Yeah. And there's some workmen behind us. That wasn't so peaceful, but for the normal reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out and got to go back in the Black Mausoleum, and I went.
I
went in for a wander. Just to see. Nothing spooked.
And nothing then, would, though. You're a ham sandwich.
And then we went out and he locked us. Oh, great. That was really good. Thank you very much. We were wandering back. And he's showing us some of the other, like, other bits and pieces around there and different mausoleums. And we got to stand outside George Mackenzie's big Grecian mausoleum. And I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. And Jamie whips out the key. I was like, oh, all right. Oh. And it opens up the door. Do you want to go in? So I went into George Mackenzie's mausoleum. Not downstairs. I could see the grate down to the tombs. I didn't go down there. I had no business being down there.
I had no business in there at all. I went nowhere near the bloody thing. Because I have no interest in being cursed.
Do you want to go in? No!
No, I'm fine.
Yeah, I'll go in. It was really beautiful. It's quite the design that's gone into it.
It's interesting when we're talking to him because it's surprisingly empty.
Yeah, it looks like there should be more statues or, like, there's little kind of...
There's spaces for things.
Inlays where you'd think something would be. But also, there's a wee broken window at the top, but there's no birds going.
Yep, it's completely empty.
It's, I mean, I say clean. It's as clean as it could be. There's no bird poop.
It was very clean.
Yeah.
It was just dusty. There was absolutely nothing else in there. We had no bird's nest in there.
Nope.
Even though it's the perfect place.
And there's a wee broken window that they could get in. Only, like, maybe, like, a foot wide.
Big enough for birds.
Good square, yeah. Not for people.
More than big enough for birds.
Very tall for people to get in.
Yeah, spooky.
Yeah, so I got to go into the Mackenzie Poltergeist's mausoleum, which is pretty cool.
I mean, it's a once in a lifetime.
Yeah, that's why I said yes. I definitely want to go there. But anyway, he's convinced that we've taken some spooks home.
You know, I have my reasons. I haven't just made it up. Because I'm going to sound like a mad woman no matter what I say. Basically, we came home and we've talked about him before. We have a dog called Odin. He's lovely. But we were standing in the kitchen. I think we're just making a cup of tea or lunch or something. We're standing in the kitchen and it was the weirdest thing because he whipped round and like curved his body to look at his own butt. Really suddenly and really quickly, he whipped round and then...
just erupted in barking.
Yeah, just these really loud barks. And it was like at the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our back door. And there's no houses behind ours. No,
you can't walk past our kitchen back door because it's just our garden. But he was going absolutely berserk, as if someone had walked past the window or was standing at the back door. To the point where you opened the door and checked.
I know, I had to go out and see because there's a neighbour who can go up and down his garden and sometimes barks at. So I went out to see if he was there to say hi, and nobody.
But there's nobody there.
Nobody there, no and cats, no pheasants.
No. And then, a couple nights ago, and you only told me the morning after, really super casually, even though it freaked my noggin, you got spooked. But you don't believe you got spooked.
No, I was like relying on falling asleep. And same age as fall asleep because I had caffeine too late because I'm caffeine sensitive that way.
Because Kieran's a baby.
Yeah. So I'm lying there. I kind of like half fell asleep and I heard Ailey whisper no in my ear. I sort of opened my eyes. I was like, well, that was weird, and then fell asleep. Because Ailey was sound asleep at this point.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
You were asleep or just falling asleep and didn't say anything.
Does that not scare you?
Nah, I was just dreaming.
So similar to what happened to me. I think you're a madman.
Some nothing.
I need to cleanse the house. Yeah. Because I don't want to take anything home.
It makes sense if I was the one being spooked, since I went. I was uninvited into his mausoleum. Very spooky.
So yeah, if you have any thoughts on that, do share them.
Mm.
If only just to tell Kieran that he's cursed.
I forgot the hashtag I used earlier. History. Oh, it's History Smells. It was nothing but spooky.
It's not quite the same.
Hashtag I was generally spooked.
Might be a bit long.
Mm.
But yeah, we were so lucky to get to do that.
Yeah.
And it's been really exciting to be able to talk about the history of the place with all of you, but then also get to talk about being there and seeing it and
get the spooks.
Having our own stories to tell you.
Mm.
We've never gotten to do that, really. So it's very exciting.
Very exciting.
And yeah, I would totally recommend going.
Yep.
Even just to see it, just to see the place, because it's incredibly beautiful and it's very significant and it's worth visiting.
Yeah, it was talked about there's a number of like writers have gone there just because they found it really peaceful.
Yeah, like there's a version of a headstone that seemed to have been turned into Ebenezer Scrooge by Charles Dickens, that he went there, and Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, went there.
Yeah, that was the other one.
It's quite incredible. It's well worth seeing. Mm-hmm. Oh, but there are rules about tours and there are rules about live streaming and all of this stuff.
I imagine there's rules about having sex there too.
Probably. You can get into that.
There's just more general
rules. I'm not going to get into... Basically, if you're listening to this and you decide that you would like to go and try and find some ghosts, there are rules about live streaming from the cemetery, and there's rules about doing a sort of traditional ghost hunt, basically. You aren't allowed to do any kind of investigation in the cemetery. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, this is just my humble opinion, it's disrespectful to do it in a cemetery. I've never liked it. I don't like seeing shows do it. I don't like anything do it, because I would be so uncomfortable if someone was doing that in a cemetery that I had a loved one in.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate it. That's by the by. It was disturbing the people who live on the walls of the cemetery,
basically. Yeah, because there's all these flats of people who look into them.
Yes.
And there's people coming with the different devices that are all super loud.
Yeah.
And they're like shouting to each other, and like some guy was banging on the tomb being like, "Are you there, George Mackenzie?"
Yeah.
And there's people trying to sleep.
So you aren't allowed to do any of that. Mm-hmm. So please don't. You are also not allowed to live stream from the cemetery.
Yeah, because it's council property.
There's rules about filming, so
you need to get a license.
So be careful. Like, don't just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it to try and be a killjoy. Just, you know, be respectful.
Yeah.
It's still a cemetery, and it's a working, active church, and people live there. So don't be a dick.
Yeah, that's what comes dangerous. Don't be a dick.
And you can only get into the Covenanters' prison, the locked part of the cemetery, if you go on a City of the Dead tour.
Yes.
They are the only people that have the key, and the Black Mausoleum is in the lock section.
Mm-hmm.
The Mackenzie Mausoleum is outside it.
Mm-hmm.
those are the main things that people get confused about.
Yep.
So just things worth knowing, not to nag.
Yeah.
Just useful.
You should go on a City of the Dead tour.
Yes.
It was awesome.
Absolutely, you should. It was incredible.
Give them a Google.
That was our first ghost tour ever.
Yep.
Ever, ever, ever. And you won't get a discount code, but you can tell them that we sent you.
I know, yeah, that'll be fun.
You won't save any money, but it'll make us happy.
Yeah. I think that about does it.
Well, do you want to close the episode? Since you got to tell part of it this time?
I mean, yes, I don't know how to close the episode.
Well, it goes something like this. You say, and that's the Mackenzie Poltergeist.
Okay, sorry.
And the Greyfriars Kirkyard.
And that's the avocado on toast.
That's number one.
And we will see you for episode 2, which we've already recorded.
Yes. Which is very strange for us.
Yep.
I really hope you like the story. I don't even know if this will be a good episode, but it's the one that means the most to me, for sure. Because I felt a hand on the back of my knee and I heard someone whispering in my ear. And I feel confident enough to say that it was a hand and it was someone whispering. It wasn't just a noise and it wasn't just a feeling. And there's no substitution for that, ever.
Mm-hmm. And if you like this format, let us know, because we could try to do more of these.
This is completely new.
Mm-hmm. Let us know on Instagram, at Generally Spooky. You can let us know on Twitter, at Generally Spooky.
Yep.
You can email generallyspooky@gmail.com.
We also upload the episodes to YouTube.
Yep, you could comment on YouTube if you're watching it on YouTube.
There's lots of ways to get in touch with us. Yeah. So yeah, if you like this format of us going and visiting a place and talking about it, then do let us know, because you know, we can plan to do that for sure.
We're in Scotland. It's not too big.
Yeah.
Alrighty. We will see you next week.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.